are you doing? I'll tell you what you're doing. You're listening to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Either you are, or I'll be skipping rope with your entrails. Ta-ta.
This is the Elder Scrolls Lorecast, your source for lore and so much more. Adventurers, welcome back to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. This is Tom and Lotus. We're back to our regular usual thing, and we're continuing our look at things up in the sky, all the craziness that's going on in space, sort of?
Sort of space,
because Elder Scrolls is weird, and this is also going on super in that weird. Orbit. Yeah, we've talked about things like the sun and the stars, a little bit about unstars, a little bit about moons, a little bit about constellations, planets, those kinds of things. But there's more than just that stuff up in the sky. So we figured we would do a final episode all about astrology and kind of give you an overview of a little bit more about those details, but then some of the other stuff that we haven't covered at all, because there's a bunch of weirdness and heck, some of the stuff up there is alive, maybe. Who knows?
But
we're going to get back into it. Lotus, welcome back to the show. I'm excited to get back into it again. How are you doing?
I'm good. This will be a fun closing up of this topic. I've enjoyed this. This is definitely something that's permeated the series from the very beginning with the birth signs and constellations and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So this is kind of our way of concluding this little mini chapter that we sometimes do with a topic that spans more than one episode. Otherwise, we'd have like a 3 or 4 hour episode.
Right. Very true. Very true. Also, we missed you last week. I got to hang out with George and we talked about like mods and stuff.
Yes. I was going to say I was very sick again.
Yeah. That's all right. It's all right. I'm glad you're feeling better.
I was gonna say, let me put it this way. Yeah. I was moderately sick. My poor wife was very sick. Mm. So trying to juggle the little one was very complicated between not coughing on her and keeping her healthy. So luckily, I got to listen to the show between you two, which is
nice.
Different.
It was fun. George is always fun to talk to you. And
he has a great dude.
All of this awesome insight. So if you haven't checked out that previous episode about are Skyrim paid mods worth it yet, then go. That's the previous episode before this on the feeds. And if you are confused about any of the stuff that we kind of very briefly bring up this week, those are in previous episodes. So more about the sun, more about the constellations. In fact, that was like 2 episodes ago, was the constellations. So we're going to go over all of that stuff a little bit, but then dive in a little bit more. So let's start with the sun. We've got the sun, and the sun seems to be a big tear in reality between Mundus and Aetherius. Aetherius being like the magical outer realm, and Mundus being like the things that were created in the inside of everything. And it was created because there's a big hole. Or at least that's one of the theories. Is that what's his face? What's his name?
Magnus.
I saw Mundus, and then that filled in the blank Mundus, of where Magnus goes, and my brain was like, it's a similar word.
It's very close.
Leaves and then leaves a hole and
punches through. Really, I mean, this is, I guess, going to only go to the demographic that's pretty much our age, I suppose. So this might not be a great reference for anybody younger than that. But if you're a millennial, apparently this will work. But there was a thing called a light bright. And that's all I think about with these it's this like device with a light behind it. And you put this black paper over it. Mm-hmm. And you have these little like sharp crystals that they have different colors and stuff. And you punch them through the paper and you get to see stuff, and the idea is to punch them in certain ways that you can make pictures. And while we were talking about constellations, all I'm thinking now is like, this is a light bright. Like, we are essentially just punching little holes in the sky and allowing magic to shine through instead of light.
Well, coincidence, that was very popular in the 80s, and the first Elder Scrolls game didn't come out until the early 90s, so maybe it had an influence on the lore. Maybe that's the source.
That would be incredible. It's the most roundabout connection ever. But it's funny. Since the last episode, that was basically what I was thinking. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to give the light bright analogy because that's really what goes through my mind when we're talking about punching holes in the sky in this.
Right. And Ross in chat says, I still have one in the back of my closet. Thanks, Ross.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I love it when our live listeners, twitch.tv/robotsradio, when our live listeners chime in with little details like that. Thanks,
I was
going
to say, like, somebody owns a light bright still, which totally makes my day right now.
That's amazing. All right. So that was Magnus. He was one of the Aedra-ish creatures, one of the godlike creatures. Aedra are Aedra because they contributed to the building of Mundus and all of that, and Magnus did until all of a sudden he didn't because he noped out, so maybe sort of an Aedra, who knows. But he also has different names according to different cultures, like Dibeth, according to Yakudin lore, Shol, according to the dragons, and Vaka. And what do you, how do you feel about Vaka? That's a
much more intimidating than some of the other ones. That sounds more like a Daedra name.
Yeah, so
it's like something you slay in the battle spire.
Right, right. And so that's according to the Argonians in their native language, Gel, which is another weird word. So yeah, who knew? All sorts of weird stuff. But even though it seems to be a hole in the sky, it also appears to be a orb. And there is some speculation around it being created by Azura, which means that it wouldn't just be a hole. It would be an object in
an actual object like the sun in real life,
right? And if you're wondering, you're like, wait a minute, you guys are the lore guys, how come you don't know this stuff? And maybe you're new to lore. Elder Scrolls lore is like this. You get a lot of competing views about a thing, and no one of them necessarily is more right than the other. Some of them just have more evidence.
But yes, it doesn't mean there's no one omnipotent narrator in this series,
right?
So a lot of it is explaining and analyzing the cultures that have their perspective, and honestly a lot of it what you interact with in the games a lot of times. And it's just like, that's, you do craft this series in a lot of ways to be your own, and it's just sort of, to your point, how much can you provide evidence to what you're explaining?
Right it, and sometimes
it's a series counter about things, basically crafting arguments.
Right, and sometimes counter explanations both appear in games at the same time, which makes you go, wait a minute, how are these two conflicting ideas true at the same time? So
which one's propaganda, which one's real?
Right. Like, are our experiences canon due to, or is our character actually perceiving reality, or does reality fluctuate depending on how people perceive it? So there's all of those questions. So if it seems like there's any contradictory things as we go through here, you're right, there are. So
if it sounds like there's contradictory things, yes.
Yes, there are. All right, so let's talk about meteors. Meteors or shooting stars are fragments of celestial matter that fall from the sky. So pretty similar to the real world in that case. They originate from Aetherius, or at least this is one of the main theories about this. And because, as we explained, Aetherius is well beyond the outreach of Mundus. It's kind of like the outer, the furthest out layer of this onion that we're inside of. And meteors containing ethereal fragments have also been found, and they're known for their strong magical properties. So Aetherius being the source of magic, that relates to the idea that that's how that seems to work, which means maybe there's some truth there.
Yeah, a lot of these things, when they come from Aetherius into the realm of, I don't know, for lack of a, the realm of play that we deal with most of the time in games, they tend to be pretty magicka infused. They carry with it a lot of the stereotypical mage aspects, a lot of magic, and it's all usually coming from above, as weird as it is. It's
right,
you know.
Right, right. And these kinds of things show up in games too. Like, you'll find like an object and be like, oh, this thing's riddled with extra magic power, maybe it fell from the sky, you know, like that kind of thing. So here, let's move on to moons. So moons are also astronomical objects. They look kind of like small planets, just like in our world, where like the moon appears to be a smallish round object that is very planet-like, but it's small in the moon because it goes around the Earth, right? But it turns out that these may also be realms of existence. They may be infinite, just like any of the planets are. They might be a separate plane of existence. In, for example, in ESO DLC, we actually travel to a moon, and it doesn't seem like a moon like we would recognize a moon.
Certainly not.
And there are two main ones. Now, this is where things get weird. Massar and Secunda, the large one and the small one. And the Khajiit believe that there is a third moon, the corpse of Lorkhaj, which is their name for Lorkhan, which only shows up every so often or in special situations.
Yeah.
So that's a little bit weird. The Jonelight Path is a mystical realm connected to Secunda, described as a place of stars and moonlight. So let's talk about solar eclipses. Solar eclipses, which coincide as vampire days, occur multiple times during the year and are specifically associated with vampires, but also spirits and the undead. So kind of in our own culture, this idea of like on a full moon, things are a little bit spookier, a little bit weirder, or
right. You know, connected to any game, you know, the newer ones are a little less aggressive with it, but it was always like, you know, full moons will cause you to turn into a were creature, regardless of whether you have control of it or not, whereas otherwise you can control the transformation. So it's very similar properties to kind of the mythical parallels we have.
Right. And similarly, eclipses are seen to be signifying of something. Traditionally, in many human cultures, eclipses are supposed to be a portent of bad things or a portent of good things. Well, in this case, they signify Akatosh losing Akatosh's favor, Akatosh being the god of time. And this can be undone with prayer or time-altering magic. So in instances where an eclipse happens, it seems like people actually have the ability to influence the eclipse and keep it from happening.
Which is interesting, because it's one of those things that you never really... Well, not that you never really, because you have the thing where you can sort of black out the sun in the Dawnguard expansion of Skyrim, so that theoretically, I guess that would be a little direct version of it. But it does make me wonder, just sometimes, because you have specific situations where with the Aelmeri Dominion convinced the Khajiit that they returned the moon when one of them was missing, and it's they don't exactly have the same patterns that we deal with in real life. I mean, granted, we only have one moon for Earth, but
not two, but, and a hidden one.
Unless, pretty predictable.
Do we have a hidden moon? If we did, we wouldn't know, because it's hidden.
That's true. It's we got Lorcan just floating around back.
Yeah.
Right. But you get some weird instances in the Elder Scrolls between blood moons and, you know, the moons disappearing at certain points and stuff like that. So it's definitely got an element of, I wouldn't say living to them, but there's more than just a celestial pattern, it seems like.
Yes. And one of my favorite mods ever for Skyrim replaced the moons with Todd Howard's face.
Beautiful.
So I'm sure there's lore implications from that as well.
Without a doubt, because then Macho Man just, you know, comes in blasting from the side. And that's right, Macho Man, the moon sets.
The Macho Man dragon shows up. Todd's looking down from the sky, you know, as you do. Thomas the Tank Engine, you know, all of that stuff.
Very canon.
Yeah, very canon. So prophetic nightmares also can warn of incoming eclipses and their supernatural effects. So this is all connected to prophecy and magic and those kinds of things. Children born under eclipses have heightened magical ability. We don't know why that is, but it does seem to be a thing. There's also this interesting point here. Daedric armor is said to be worked on only at night, avoiding eclipses. Weird.
Makes me want to, like, craft Daedric armor during an eclipse and see what happens.
What happens?
Right? Like, what... It turns out it's like not impressive. It's just super brittle or something. It's just lame. It's
right. Just it just doesn't work so,
like,
good.
No, you don't do it because it's bad. Like, the armor just comes out poor.
Right.
It's like, oh,
yeah.
What a depressing side effect.
Yeah. Don't water your grass when it's already raining out. It just makes it too wet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, it's like, okay. Yeah, there wasn't anything fancy. You just ruined the Daedra heart to make this ebony armor into Daedric. Right. What's the matter with you?
Yep. So we also talked about the hidden moon, and then Lorcan's body being part of the hidden moon, all of that. Well, there's also some weirdness, and this goes back to the ESO thing. The dragon Calgrunteed attempted to absorb Jode's core to become a new moon and rival Akatosh. So didn't exactly take the place of Lorcan to rival Akatosh, although there's definitely lore around utilizing, say, Lorcan's heart for the Numidium and stuff like that.
Very much.
But it's a similar kind of idea. Yeah. This idea of, like, okay, well, I'm going to absorb the core of Jode, which is clearly not just a big round object in the sky, in order to then, in some ways, gain enough power or potentially even mantle somebody like Akatosh by gaining that power. It's all weird, but that was a thing. And in ESO, you stop it from happening, so it doesn't actually happen.
Right. But what the result would have been.
Right. It seems like it maybe could have, or at least they believed it could have. So that's crazy. So, yeah, moons are crazy. Planets are basically the realms and maybe also the bodies of the Aedra floating around up there in the sky. They are infinite in size, but they look like round orbs floating in the sky. So that's weird. Now, we've talked about planets before, so we're going to go through this pretty quick. We don't need to cover all of that stuff.
Yeah, but a lot of this we've covered before. So. Right,
but this is an instance. This little detail is interesting. The largest shooting stars are actually planets with independent orbits. One of the most well-known is the rogue planet Bandar. The bandit god. This is like the trickster spirit god. Yep. Of the Khajiit culture, who is floating around almost like a planet, but not really, but yes, it still is, but isn't in Aedra, is a trickster god. Like, what? How does that work? It's a thing. There you go. Any thoughts on Bandar?
No, I mean, I do find it funny that anything related to the bandit god, it's just he permeates so much of the lore from this stuff, and it's like I love
it's a very Khajiit thing too.
I know it's a very Khajiit stereotype,
not just a stereotype, this idea that like this is an influential enough cosmic being of some sort that it actually is something that they very much
this is the thing worship. It's like it's such a like, oh, you know, Khajiit have the thievery like aspect to their existence, but it's funny because to your point, they have literal gods designed around it. Like,
yeah.
So it's really just super influential, even to the point of planets being like influenced by like thievery, which is just a strange concept.
Right. Like a lot of the Aedra are connected to some foundational aspect of like nature, human nature, those kinds of things. But like, this is like thievery, which seems like, I guess that's a foundational concept for Khajiit.
Yeah.
So you got that. Also, you might be wondering, are there people on planets? Like, if these are actual realms of some sort, and we also know that there are realms of Oblivion, and there are people in Oblivion, whether they're, you know, any of the races from, you know, Nern or Daedra or whatever, then maybe there's people on these planets. But according to most scholars across Tamriel, that there aren't actually people on the planets. This is not
it's just slowed. No,
it's only slowed and dreg. No, it's,
that is a lie.
But I don't know that we actually have any real evidence for that. It's just kind of like generally assumed thing.
Yeah, there's no indication of life. So as a result, you don't assume life unless kind of shown otherwise would be the situation. Like, you don't need to assume something is there until something is proven to possibly be there.
Right, right. But it also does seem a little bit weird that you can have realms of Oblivion that have living creatures in them.
They're just, yeah. But how are these planets just chilling?
Yeah, how are these planets that different than other realms like Oblivion?
Infinite existence, but nothing's there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so we already talked about stars. Stars are little holes. We did a whole episode on stars and constellations. They're kind of like the sun being like this poking hole in the sky. They may have been aspects of... his name fell out of my head again. Not Mundus.
Oh, Magnus?
Magnus. You know, aspects of Magnus that broke off, became these other deities that also poked holes in the sky or whatever.
His name broke off, which is why we're struggling with it. His name
keeps breaking out of my brain. But also, there are unstars, and you and I have speculated about unstars, and the general understanding of unstars is that they resemble stars, but they move across the sky in a different pattern than the regular stars, which all kind of stay together, just like in our own sky. But they do not emit varlians. We've talked about this before as well. That's magical energy. So the way that regular stars work is they are holes to Aetherius, supposedly, and they emit magical energy because that's where magic comes from. But unstars don't do that. They still emit light, but its nature and effect on mortals is uncertain. So there's kind of some speculation around that and weirdness. There is the serpent constellation, which is consistent of four unstars. And we talked about that on a previous episode. It seems to kind of travel however it wants. It's very weird. Right.
It's almost consistently inconsistent. That's really its only consistency, is how inconsistent it is, which is a weird concept in and of itself.
Right. But even though it's inconsistent, some people are able to forecast where it is, and it never coincides with the part of the sky that the sun is in.
Right. Exactly. So weird. That's just it. It's just like, okay.
Yeah, the Unstars. That's a good name for a band, Russ. Russ Chat says the Unstars. Rez says the increased magic when born under an eclipse may be the child's body trying to absorb more magic. magicka when there is less than the average amount, or the opposite, that there is more magicka.
I actually kind of like that. Mm. I saw that in chat. That's actually kind of a cool idea, with the eclipse being like restricting the amount of magicka that's flowing through. So it's like, okay, so is the person's natural inclination to struggle harder to get it, because it's, you don't have the normal flow, so that extra effort when you're born essentially, or a child, does that mean you basically put in the work early, so now you're really adept at it, so then once the eclipse is gone and you have full access, are you able to really pull in magicka much easier now because you were basically trained when you were forming? And it was so restrictive. It's kind of, I like that idea. I've never heard that, but I like that. That's pretty neat.
If you extrapolate that a little bit more, there's two kinds of eclipses. There's a solar eclipse where the moon goes in front of the sun and blocks out the sun. Then there's a lunar eclipse where the shadow of the earth covers the moon from the sun. In both cases, there will be less light. Because the sun is either blocked, so that main source of magical light doesn't come through, or the reflection of the sun is blocked from the moon due to the shadow of the earth, which means in both cases there's less light. So
you're restricting light, or in this case you're restricting magicka flow. So it's like, it's like the idea of like training in high altitudes, so that when you go to a lower altitude it's actually very easy to breathe. It's that type of thing. It's like, I'm essentially training in restricted magicka, so once I have access to full magicka, I can just scoop it all up. So it's like, I've never heard that before, but I kind of like that theory. That's interesting.
Who knows, a lot of this stuff is very interpretable, so that maybe that actually tracks. But here, there's other objects in this, or that have to do with the sky or in the sky also, beyond just the things that we've talked about. What about aurora? This is another thing that happens in our own world. You tend to get closer to the poles and you can see the colors whipping around in the sky. And the reason that happens is due to the stuff coming from the sun and hitting the magnetic field of the earth at weird angles and creating lights in the sky. We won't get into all the science of it, but this does actually happen to Mundus also. Mundus is weird, though, because it's not like the planet Earth. So what exactly is an aurora? Well, these are similar in that they are vivid ribbons of light. They appear when the skies are clear, and they can be seen in Oblivion and Aetherius.
Which is weird.
Which is weird, right? Like, these are not planets that have magnetic fields. These are different realms.
I want to, in terms of being super reductive, I want to just say replace magnetic field from real life with magic field. Scrolled, and you're essentially like, okay, well, it looks magic in real life, but it can be explained because of, again, refracting lights and stuff with the angle of the planet, and you have magnetic poles that we have on our planet. And we have literal magic in the Elsie.
That's an interesting question. Do you think, have we ever seen a compass, a magnetic compass, in an Elder Scrolls game?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, because
they have HUD.
Compasses, but I wonder if they've ever mentioned they're magnetic.
Right. I don't know that we know that there are poles. We know that there's a north and a south.
This information. I don't know that that's.
Yeah, we something. Don't know that we. I don't think we know that. Anyway, that there's actually a magnetic poles on. Anyway, if you know more about that than we do, this is just hit me off the top of my head now. I wish I'd thought about it earlier when I was putting the notes together. Magnetic. So, all right. So let's talk about the blood moon. So a blood moon occurs when Hercene's great hunt takes place on Nirn. So good old Hercene, the Daedric prince of the hunt. During this event, Secunda turns a deep red, becoming the blood moon. Notice it's also Secunda again. This is not Massar. It's the second moon. It's the smaller one. The hunt ends when the blood moon disappears. So it's kind of like a time limit for when the hunt begins and when it ends. It's considered a call to the chase, and Hercene's hunting. In Hercene's hunting ground, the blood moon is a constant phenomenon due to the ongoing great hunts. But you would have to assume that version of a blood moon isn't the same perspective on Secunda, because Secunda is not in the Daedric realm of her seeing Daedric Realm, right?
Like the hunting grounds. Right.
So it must be, it must look like a blood moon, but yet isn't the same exact thing as what happens on Nern.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So weird.
A little bit. And I've fallen down the magnetic north.
You're doing that
whole love.
He's doing the research.
Lore. All right, right. I'm going to close that window because that is apparently a hot debate.
Wow. All right. Who knew?
Yeah, we are not the first people to ask that or pose that there is an answer or not. Mm-hmm. So,
all right, so let's
close
talk
that window for now.
Yeah,
it's many pages.
Let's talk a little bit more about eclipses, right? We kind of opened up that door. Let's go into this. Eclipses occur when one celestial body is obscured by another, often due to one passing between the body and Nern sky, right? Like I explained this to you.
Yeah, like
kinds.
We kind of talked about a second ago.
A solar eclipse in Tamriel, known as vampire days, happens several times a year, increasing encounters with spirits, vampires, and undead.
Eclipses. Sorry, that sounds like an amusement park or something, like a promotion. Vampire days
at Halloween.
Yeah,
you know, spooky
fire 7th through the 9th.
Spooky Halloween nights over at the theme park. Yeah. Eclipses are sometimes seen as a loss of Akatosh's favor, which we talked about. Prophetic nightmares sometimes warn of this. Daedric armor shouldn't be worked on eclipse days, right? So that's all weird. Dark eclipses occur when both moons eclipse the sun, revealing the third moon. So when the dark moon is able to be seen, that's considered a dark eclipse. Khajiit, born under an eclipse, are seen as part of the main first stock, marked by Alkosh's divine grace, though not all become the main. Alkosh is Akatosh.
Right.
So I almost said Alkatosh, which sounds like something you take when you have a cold.
I was thinking it was the island where we keep people.
So the main, the leader of the Khajiit, has to be born basically under an eclipse. But not everyone who is born under eclipse is a main.
Right. It's one of those, here is one scenario, but not all scenarios fall into it.
Right.
Type of bit, because you can't have the idea is to not have multiple mains.
Like, right.
Only one main will be the main.
Right. And so we also talked about how if you're born under eclipse, you tend to be more gifted in magic, but there's more risk of the darkness of Lorkhaj and corruption, especially among the Khajiit, because it's Lorkhaj, which is one of their beliefs, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the Necromancer's Moon. This is an eclipse. So the Necromancer's Moon, let me phrase this correctly, eclipses RK every 8 days, causing the shade of the Revenant, which casts a purple light on certain Tamriel locations for 24 hours. So every 8 days, there's this thing called the Necromancer's Moon, which also sounds like a really cool name for an album.
Necromancer's Moon?
Yeah. Yeah. If I was a band in like the late 60s, early 70s, I would have an album called Necromancer's Moon. And then I would also try to sing like, what's his face from Led Zeppelin?
Robert Plant?
I can't sing like Robert Plant, but
no.
I wish I could.
You could just have, it's just a in the God of DeVita the entire time.
There you go. It's just, yeah. Necromancer's Moon.
Necromancer. No, now we're probably right struck.
Necromancer's Moon, baby. No.
Yeah,
Necromancer.
I'm sorry.
All right.
I too pitch perfect.
Thank you. All right. So there's also weird things that happen in the sky, like equinoxes. This is an astronomical event where day and night are nearly equal in length. This is a very normal thing. We have equinoxes twice a year on our planet. It's because the planet is spherical and on an axis. And at those times of the year, the day and night is the same. In liminal bridges, Kemalonway of Alanor discusses the equinox's importance in magical practices, specifically in transforming a morpholith into a sigil stone. So this is very important if you want to transform a morpholith into a sigil stone, don't we all? Here's the ritual.
Who wouldn't?
The ritual requires a purified chamber and the morpholith placed on at dawn during the equinox. The ritualist performs rites uninterrupted until sunset, enhancing the ritual's effectiveness. This allows a Daedra lord to inscribe the morpholith, turning it into a sigil stone capable of sustaining powerful arcane energy. So, if you're Daedra lord and you want to sustain powerful arcane energy, make sure you do it on equinox. It's important.
Common knowledge.
Right. I mean, I guess I don't even need to go over that. Everybody
yeah, I mean, that's just obvious.
Right. So here's another fun little note. In ancient tales of the Dwemer, Gorfelim, alias Maribor Sol, describes a dual equinox phenomenon where a tonal architect tries to synchronize a great animus geode with the equinoxes to capture Nirnpith essence. Don't we all want that Nirnpith essence?
Again, yes, clearly.
Yes, also super weird. Now, it mentions tonal architecture. Tonal magic is very much a Dwemer thing. It has to do with tones, like sounds and those kinds of things, and synchronizing with a dual equinox, which who even knows what that means? This is part of a fictional account influencing public perception of the Dwemer. So this is another one of those books that who knows if this is actually real or just propaganda?
Yeah.
We don't really know. But then again, who doesn't want a Nirnpith essence?
I
ask for one for Christmas every year, and I just never get one.
I put it in my bedside drawer with all my Mimo spores.
Nice.
All right, that's enough random references.
There's also an item called the Gauntlets of the Equinox. These are mithril gauntlets with frost resistance, which were discovered in Cyrodiil in the late Third Era, named after the equinox phenomenon. So
That's pretty cool.
All right. So you can't talk about equinoxes without talking about solstices, which are the shortest or longest day of the year. They're kind of the inverse of equinoxes. Equinoxes happen in the summer and the winter, and solstices happen in the summer and the winter, right?
Yeah.
So this is like the lowest point of the sun on the horizon, that kind of thing. The New Life Festival is celebrated on the first of Morningstar, which marks the end of the old year and the beginning of the new, symbolizing hope and fresh beginnings. We just had that in ESO.
We sure did. Long ago.
Let's see. Each Tamrielic culture has unique traditions surrounding the winter solstice. Words are hard. Solstice Indrix are said to have originated from a child's toy, magically transformed on the longest night of the year. So another magical thing that has to happen on a very specific day or night.
Also, that is a concept is kind of weird that a child's toy then became a real thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So there was no basis for Indrix prior to that. That would imply, if I'm understanding that correctly.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah.
Like if you draw a picture and then like turn it into a stuffed animal or something like that. And then it's like, oh, and now this is a real creature as a result of magical influence. That's a little freaky.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like Vardvarks or something.
Yeah. Yeah. So this is fun. Alduin, also known as the Twilight God, Alduin the Dragon from Skyrim, was once venerated during the winter solstice through ceremonies at Dragonkult temples where offerings were made to keep him asleep for another year. These rituals continued even after the fall of the Dragonkult into the interregnum of the Second Era. This goes all the way back to the Dragonkult and dragon priests and a lot of the stuff that is revealed from the lore in Skyrim. And we covered a lot of that stuff on that episode. That was a while back, but you can go check that out if you want more of that stuff. And then there is an item associated with the solstice, similar to an item associated with the equinox. The Shield of Winter Solstice is an elven shield with frost resistance and was found in Cyrodiil during the late Third Era, named after the solstice. So there you go. One of each. The summer solstice, listen, we go from winter solstice to summer solstice, is the longest day of the year when the sun's at the highest point. The exact, and this is weird, the exact date of the summer solstice in the Tamrielic calendar is unclear, which is super weird because...
Like what?
How do you know the date of the winter solstice and the equinoxes, but you can't figure out what the date of the summer...
You know, it's between the 4th and the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what? Yeah, why is this one unpredictable?
Right. It's weird, right? So during this time, Massar shines brightly, not Secunda, the other moon, Massar, and the Steed constellation becomes prominent in the southern sky. We talked about constellations on the previous episode, how they kind of move across the sky in uniform succession, just like they do for our world. But this is, at this point, the Steed is up in the, like, the foremost constellation in the sky. The Khajiit clergy of Alkosh in Sunspire compares Jode to the intense heat and redness of the summer solstice. So it's maybe some relation there between Jode and the summer solstice. So there you go. That's all of that crazy stuff.
I was going to say that's a lot for your quadrants of the year.
Right. But we're not done yet. We still got some more. Let's talk about star maps and orreries. Orrery is a wonderful word.
Orrery is a very weird word.
Yes. So orreries and star maps are things that can be found in different cultures. So, for example, we're just going to go into it. The most advanced knowledge of the Hepens comes from the relics of the Dwemer, and you can find, I should have prepped this to put up on the screen. It's actually going to be in the thumbnail of the episode. There's this, it looks like a spider web with little runes in it in different spots, and that is a Dwemer star chart, which basically kind of lays out their perception of the way things in the sky work. For us, it seems very vague with all of these just kind of weird symbols and different quadrants across the spider web, if you can picture it like that. It's a little weird, right?
Yeah, and actually, spider web's a pretty good way of kind of explaining it. If you play ESO, there's like some hand-drawn versions of it in the game and stuff like that. If you happen to play ESO, you might recognize it.
Right, and you can find these at different locations, and they don't mean a whole lot to us, but they do tell us that the Dwemer were studying the stars, they were studying the skies, and they were probably using that in some of their technology, some of the science that they developed. And as far as we know, they were the most progressive scientifically of any of the cultures. Yeah,
technologically advanced. Right. Like they really prioritized knowledge and I would say more so, like, rather than just knowledge, the acquisition of knowledge to be like the highest of importance, because it's just like, yeah, we need to know how everything works because then we can control it. Like,
right. Yeah. Yeah. It was all about control.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the Dwemer have their star charts, which are the most advanced looking. The Reachfolk actually have these ancient plaques that they would use in order to talk about the sky and their sky tales and to track things moving around. So the Reachfolk did this. The Yakudans did it as well. They use sand maps, which strangely enough look very similar to dwarven star charts. They're just as detailed. They're kind of like a spider web kind of shape, but instead of having runes, they've got like squares and circles and those kinds of things kind of plotted out in the spider web in the different little chambers moving out from the center. It's like a radial configuration, you could call it. And then we have Elder Scrolls, and it's not uncommon in an Elder Scrolls to see something that also looks like a star chart that seems very similar to either the Yakudin or the Dwemer star charts. And that, I don't think that's a coincidence. I think that there's clearly something that having to do with the Elder Scrolls and the mapping of the cosmos and how all of these things correspond and influence each other.
Right.
So,
and as we know, the Elder Scrolls are basically the pinnacle of weird magic going on in so many ways. So the fact that they would have a tie to this is almost inevitable in some way or another. So
yeah.
So it's funny that the series is named after it, and it's an object that we really just deal with tangentially more than anything else.
Yeah, there's, I mean, as much as we get through each of the different games in the series and then even get to interact with them, it just leads to more mystery, you know?
Yeah.
Which is part of the fun.
Right. They're like purposefully undefinable with, you know, I forget what book it's from offhand. If somebody happens to know, you can feel free to toss it in comments or whatever. But it was like the situation where it's like the amount of, if you count the amount of Elder Scrolls in the Imperial Library, it's not always the same.
Yeah, the number changes.
And it's just like, it's right. So weird.
People who
it's
read like, it go crazy. Concept,
that's so weird.
Yeah, that stuff is always so weird. But it makes sense that, I mean, when we're talking about objects in the sky, oftentimes we're talking about celestial powers, magic, Aedra, Daedra, All of these things which have some very, very strong effect on why the world is the way it is, why Mundus is the way it is, why Tamriel is the way it is, why the different cultures are the way they are, what they believe, why they believe what they believe, and what their impression of all of that means to the beginning of time and where future is going. And so much of that stuff, we're talking the astrology of the Elder Scrolls games. That is what astrology is. It's using the stars to explain why things are the way they are. And it seems like all of that is very important. So, of course, it would make sense that these cultures are charting these things and, myth.
Analyzing them.
Yeah, myth and legends get designed around explaining these things. And then they would also show up in the Elder Scrolls. So there you go. I hope this was a fun episode, because that's it for all the different objects, because, I mean, as far as I know, that's pretty much all of them, and kind of a fun overview of everything else that we haven't covered yet in more detail. So just wanted to do a cleanup of everything. I hope you've enjoyed
it. Exactly. Hopefully that's a fulfilling conclusion to the Elder Scrolls in space.
The Elder Space Scrolls.
Exactly. But no, it's been a fun little, I don't know, mini series, I guess, of doing some of these, because there was some stuff that I actually, when we were researching some of this, there were a few things that I was like, I had zero idea that's how that works. So that's kind
of
neat.
Yeah, all sorts of weird stuff. And again, with so much, like, some of them just have like a single reference, like one little reference here to this thing, and it's like, does that mean anything more than that? We don't know. But here you go.
This is one of those topics in the series that's ripe for speculation. Like there's so many, there's just little nuggets of stuff that we've been given, and it's like, oh man, you can come up with so many different theories, and then every now and then you get a different type of interaction in a game where it's like, oh, okay, well, now we've got this to add to the equation. What does that mean? Does this debunk any theories, or does it make this actually seem more likely or whatever? And it's I like how it's the backbone a lot to a lot of what you interact with in the game, but never really the focus very much. It's oftentimes like, well, yeah, right from the original, the basis of some of your character stats are determined by these things.
Constellations and, all of that stuff. Which god do you worship, like, and is that a planet in the sky? Yeah.
Right. So right from the get-go with Elder Scrolls 1 Arena, this has been a big part of the series, and it's just been explored in different ways as the series has gone on.
Yep. So very cool stuff. Thank you for joining us. We're going to take a real quick break, and then we're going to be back to thank our patrons and talk about stuff that's on the way coming next. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
This is Hamish Morak, Dragonborn, and you are educating yourself to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast.
Thanks, Wes Johnson. By the way, those are actually Wes Johnson. He did those for us when we got to interview him on the show. So
I was going to say, it was our first interview with him.
Yeah, it's always so fun.
I'm very, very glad to hear that Wes is doing so much better. So.
Yes, absolutely.
Shout out to you, Wes.
Yeah, shout out to Wes. You know what else I really enjoy is I get these notifications about once a month where my little email pops up from Patreon and is like, hey, some of your merch is about to go out to some people. And I'm like, yes, that's so cool. Because, they get the t-shirts and the stickers and stuff. And I love the fact that, like, oh, they're going to open up their mailbox one day and they're going to go, oh, I got a t-shirt. Like, it's so fun. But we also have to,
as a really funny aside that literally just happened, like, as we were joking about this, Wes, what do you call a thing on Blue Sky? The tweets?
Reskied? I don't know.
Reskied? I don't know. He just reskied us saying we were live, which is just kind of funny.
That's
just
great.
More proof that Wes is doing good.
That's great.
It's just really funny that we were talking about that and my phone just chirped.
That's amazing. He's such a nice guy. Hi, Wes. All right. So we have to welcome our newest patrons. We've got Wilhelm W., David, M. Rose Official, Alexander C., and Kyle W. Welcome to the Patreon. So glad that you're here. Hope you're enjoying the ad-free episodes. There's a bunch of stuff, t-shirts, stickers. You can join us for patron chats. Our patron chat is coming up next week. So this will be on the 27th at 9 p.m. Eastern is usually when we start. And it's a little bit late for Lotus these days because he's on baby duty, baby time.
Yeah, I'm on baby time.
Baby time. And baby time is sometimes wake up 4 o'clock in the morning. So we'll make it work as best we can.
We're doing our best to keep consistent shows going for you and as consistent for my other show as possible.
Yeah, yeah. And if you'd like to join us, you'll still have time to sign up, patreon.com/Elder Scrolls Lorecast. And we always decide like within the last day or two before the show happens what the topic will be, and oftentimes, in fact almost all the time, it's informed by the patrons deciding and kind of voting on stuff together if there's multiple ideas. So you're welcome to join us, you're welcome to suggest a topic that you would love to discuss, and that's Lotus and I are happy to have everybody and hang out and talk about things that we all love. So come join us for that. And we also have to shout out our Daedric Princes, Blinding Vision, Hercene, Kiracy, and Peter R. Thank you so much for your continued support, and to all 144 of our paying patrons, thank you so
good
much.
Good Lord. Thank you.
You can also join up for free. And Lotus and I, our schedules have been crazy. We still need to figure out what we're doing to do some giveaways. So if you want to make sure that we'll get this out sometime in the next few weeks. But if you want to make sure that you are able to get into a giveaway, then join us on the Patreon, even as a free member, for opportunities to do that. And it might be the kind of thing that we do just every so often, like even maybe just as a surprise. Hey, guys, we got some codes, you know. Yeah, answer a question and then we'll just pick one at random or something like that.
Yeah, for sure.
So go check that out. And then also thank you to everybody who helps support the show on Apple and Patreon and Spotify. That's the word. It has a P in it. So of course it takes place in my brain. And if you want to get your words on the show, you can leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it out on a future episode. We don't have any new ones this week, but you can also rate the show on Spotify. If you're watching the video, welcome. So glad that you're here. Our YouTube audience continues to grow, and you know, give us a thumbs up, recommend us to some other people. All of that stuff absolutely helps.
What's the stereotype? Smash the like button.
Subscribe. Hit the bell thing. That's what they say, right?
Is that how that works anymore?
I think so. I think it still works.
I just hope you enjoy the video and you can share it if you like.
Yeah. And if you have some thoughts or questions about like what you want us to cover in the future, comment. Let us know.
Yeah.
We'll take it into consideration.
Ask us in one way or another. There's lots of ways to reach us to ask us stuff.
Yes.
Or just give us your opinion. Because honestly, sometimes, even in chat tonight, I love like, oh, I never thought of that. That's great. Like, that's really neat.
Absolutely. And if all of else fails, then make sure to wait till the summer solstice. And on a night where the solstice and eclipse happens at the same time, then craft some Daedric armor and then send it in the mail to us and we'll get your message.
I expect it to be hyper brittle.
Super brittle, but at least it'll convey your message. And that's what matters the most. Lotus, you have anything else you want to share before we head out?
No, I was going to say speaking of getting everything, all the stars to align, we managed to record an episode of Tales. So that's new this week. If you're checking out that show, enjoy Tales of Tamriel presented by the UESP. And we actually had talked about before, we're going to be doing our big spoiler cast thing because they just announced, if you're an ESO player, that this April, they're going to be doing the new reveal for the upcoming year and the direction that they're going with the story and the content and stuff like that, what areas we're going to be exploring. So we are doing our spoiler cast, which we usually do to end the year, but because of the gap, we didn't really rush to get it out there. So we've got TES Benefactor and Avron joining us on Tales of Tamriel so that we can discuss the last official chapter, which is being called. I mean, we don't know how they're going to structure stuff going forward. They're mixing it up. So
I guess we'll have to see.
We're doing our conclusion of that style of content that was released. And that should be the next episode of Tales coming out, hopefully this coming week. So you'll be getting back-to-back episodes instead of bi-weekly.
Hey, there you go. Catching up. Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thanks for tuning in, everybody. Robotsradio.net for my other shows, the Lord of the Rings Lorecast, the Fallout Lorecast. I've got this one, and there's a bunch of other shows on the network by other hosts. And we'd love to see you again. If you have any other thoughts or questions, just let us know. And until then, have a wonderful rest of your week, and we'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Always be born under an eclipse.
See you later.
Thanks for tuning in to the Elder Scrolls Lorecast. Check out robotsradio.net for more podcasts just like this, and join us on the Robots Radio Discord. Be part of a community of over 5,000 people who are excited about video games and so much more. Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.